I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
My junior year, he was like, "You've been off this year. Like, what's going on with you?" And then I was like, "Ugh." And I like came out to him and I was like, "I've been dealing with this for the last couple months. Like, that's what's going on." And I started crying and I was like, "Get over yourself, dude. You are not the first person to come out as a lesbian to their soccer coach. Like, what do you think you're doing?"
I'm dyking out, you're dyking out. Let's dyke out together. See what it's all about. Dyking out, dyking out, dyking out, dyking out.
Hi, and welcome to Dyking Out, the JoJo Siwa's Minion makeup of podcasts. Oh, I'm Carolyn Bergier.
What does that mean? I'm Melody Kamali. And today we're dyking out with comedian Nico Carney.
You gotta Google it. Like, Google it right now.
JoJo Siwa Minion makeup?
Minion makeup.
On my Discover page today, is it Bejeweled?
Yes.
I saw, okay. Then I saw all I need to see.
Just covered her face in rhinestones to look like a minion.
Cool.
I don't know. It feels quirky. It feels gay with the culture. So that's us. That's us. Some announcements. Rate and review us, please, on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, because you can leave reviews on Spotify now.
Who knew?
Also join our Patreon. Our Patreon, Melody, what's going on there?
So much hot goss. So yes. Many deets on your open marriage.
Oh, God.
We only scratched the surface on here. Me being more chaotic. Shit talking and lesbian gossip.
Yes, we have extra episodes every week. We have a Discord where we talk about the episodes and like go more in depth and answer questions there, and also just like post queer news. For $20 a month, you get tickets to our Stonewall shows. And also, we have Patreon hangs on Zoom. We had one last night, and what a thrill.
Wow.
That was insane.
Like, we can't even talk about it. We got gossip.
Yeah, we got gossip from our patrons. Like, usually I think it's like people are going to ask us questions, but there's always more interesting people than us on the Zoom telling us their life stories, and our jaws were unhinged. So much fun. So yeah, a lot of reasons. Also, if you don't like ads, you can get ad-free episodes on our Patreon. It's very important.
Yeah.
Please sign up. Actually, Nico, why should people join our Patreon? Give another reason.
Because it's really important to support queer artists, and you got to do it. Do your part.
Nico, you think I'm an artist. I love that. Thank you.
Definitely.
Bust out the beret. Let's go.
Yeah. Wow. Even after watching us bomb our host set at Stonewall on Monday, you think we are artistes?
I loved it. I was a fan.
Did you know what Dinosaur was? I feel like that was part of the battle.
No, I was not familiar, but I was enjoying you guys kind of watching the audience sort through that and then
process that. Yeah. You know, we're out here trying to do the work, and it's just, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard, but someone's got to do it.
Let's talk about more fun stuff. Carolyn.
Yep.
What's the gayest thing you did this week?
The gayest thing I did this week, well, a couple things. Just today, I posted on Lex for the first time.
Whoa, congratulations.
Yes, and I posted on Lex too, because people are like, you should post your events on Lex. So the day we're recording this, I have Loves a Pitch tonight at Come On Everybody, and I'm like, oh, this is a no-brainer to post on Lex. It's a queer dating show. Mm-hmm. We want the audience full of like thirsty singles. So I post, but I realized when I made my Lex profile, I was like out in Oakland. So like, I couldn't even post on Lex, right? I just felt like such a noob. It was like Oakland, and then I'm promoting something in Brooklyn. And then I also forgot that I made my handle on Lex, Professional Les. And then I was just like very embarrassed about that. So I'm just like, I don't know. So that felt very gay, just like posting on Lex and spiraling immediately and then deleting and then reposting. But also, the gayest thing I've been doing is I've been just working in my pajamas all week and taking these Zoom meetings, and people can tell I'm wearing a tie-dye Dyke beer tank that's just like very comfortable. And when I wake up, I like, I don't want to take it off. So they're like, look at this person in their Dyke beer tie-dye showing up to these Zooms every day.
As if the hair's not enough.
I know. No shame.
Just throw some more.
Yeah. Just keeping it real. And now everybody knows that, yeah, this is the energy that I bring to my freelance work. Melody, what's the gayest thing you did this week?
Okay, well, speaking of merch, speaking of t-shirts, I bought yet another piece of Grover paraphernalia. I am, of course, talking about Grover from the Sesame Street. I'm obsessed with Grover. This Grover sits on my desk here. Listeners
so
can't see, but
that.
It's a super Grover.
Put a pic on the Patreon.
There it is. I am obsessed with Grover. Nico, did you watch the Sesame Street at all?
I did, yeah. I was a big Elmo guy.
Elmo, you can't go wrong.
And the classic.
So I have a Grover shirt on the way from Depop. So excited. But I was thinking about how Grover's a queer icon. And at some point, a couple days ago, I Googled Grover is a gay icon just to see what would come up. And I was reminded that in 2018, I remember this, there was a viral thread that a comedian had put out. And it was around the time when people were arguing over whether or not Bert and Ernie are queer. And there was like controversy about that. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Right.
So they're like, yeah, absolutely. But that doesn't matter. The truth is every single character on Sesame Street is queer, and then goes through all of them and gives a little blurb on them. So it like kicked off with Big Bird, non-binary icon, asexual, why their best friend is Snuffleupagus, an older gay man, and just like gives like a whole little backstory and just as proof on why each one is queer. So your boy Elmo is Sesame Street's most famous twink. Caused mass hysteria when he came out in the 90s. Everyone wanted to collect him like straight people did with gays then. refers to himself in the third person, gay.
Yeah.
In parentheses. Has no job, but is literally at every single event on the books. That's very gay culture.
Yes.
Grover, of course, bisexual blue icon. I mean, look at the Super Grover coloring. That's the bi flag colors.
Yeah.
We got red, blue, purple, and pink. I'm so giddy right now. Love Sesame Street.
You're just high on Grover.
I am. You can't explain it. Grover makes me so happy. You know, greets Kermit with, hey, Froggy Babes. Tilts his head to the side when he thinks you said something dumb. That's very bisexual, I think. Has a lot of duets. Refuses to use contractions. That's pretty bisexual. Even the stance, the pictures they use on this thread are great. If you Google, I guess Grover is a gay icon or just Sesame Street gay, you'll see out.com has it all compiled in an article. I'm obsessed.
Wait, who's the lesbian? Is it Fozzie?
No, wait, hold on. It's Prairie Dawn.
Okay.
Okay. Very prepared, organized lesbian woman. Has no time for the messiness, so only deals with the gays when she needs to clean things up. The gays of Sesame Street don't appreciate her enough. Plays piano, has a very popular biopic called Carol.
Wait, Fozzie Bear is the Muppets, but there's crossover with the Muppets
there
and Sesame
is.
Street. I think that's where I get confused sometimes.
I think that's why I don't care as much, because Grover isn't repped in Muppets, right? There's Gonzo, which a lot of people will confuse.
There's Gonzo. I feel like, but wasn't Grover in Muppet Babies?
I know Gonzo is. I was more of a Sesame Street kid.
Yeah. I will say, like, Maria is one of my roots. Like, I was just, like, in love with Maria as...
We have a friend who has a kid. Anne's kid.
Yeah.
Is allowed to only watch, as far as TV goes, Muppet Babies on Disney Plus, which Jenny Slate is a voice on, is, like, the main... human.
What?
Who has, I noticed the voice immediately. Best job ever. So jealous. But I noticed there's no Grover. That's the first thing I noticed.
Okay.
So we watch Muppet Babies, and this baby's only allowed to watch that. Videos on YouTube of penguins and Drag Race clips, because she's obsessed with drag queens.
Right. That's amazing.
That's the only thing this year and a half year old is allowed to watch. Gay.
Yeah. That's great parenting.
Obviously, Muppets. I'm sure Sesame Street we can squeeze in there too. As we know now, gay canon. That's my gayest thing of the week.
Great.
Thank you so much for listening. Grover forever. Oh, can't wait for that shirt. Anyways, Nico, what is the gayest thing you did this week?
The gayest thing I did this week, and I knew it when it happened. I was like really tired, and I was like laying in bed with my girlfriend, and I was just kind of like cuddling on top of her, just like laying there with my face like buried in her chest. And then like half asleep, started singing Phoebe Bridgers' Kyoto to myself. Just she like looked down at me and was like, what are you doing? What are you singing? And I was like, oh my God.
Oh man. That song in particular too. Yeah. Wow. What a mood.
I was like, kind of like half asleep, dozing off, and just kind of like in my own head, like singing to myself, like not really paying attention. And she like looked down and was like, Nico, what are you doing? What are you singing right now? It's like Kyoto.
I love that so much. That's so gay. That is even gayer than you crushing it at our Stonewall show on Monday and making like the entire audience fall in love with it. Like they were freaking out. They didn't know what to do with themselves.
I know. It was very... Elvis. It was very the Beatles. It was very Michael Jackson. It was like you were crushing and everyone was dying, but there were whispers when there would be pause for laughs, because we could hear from the tech booth of just everyone be like, oh, he's so hot, he's so cute, oh my God. Fainting. Like I had to like be on watch. Like they would have stretchers at those, you know, Elvis shows for girls just fainting. It was very heartthrob vibes. I loved it.
I think you need merch that's like Teen Beat posters of yourself and just start selling those at shows, because it'd be a hit. I don't know.
Oh, I love that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always love doing, I mean, it's always such a joy to be able to be in like any queer space, but especially when it's like a dyke space, like obviously like that's always going to be so much fun. Like the energy in those rooms is always like so warm and so good. So I really
unless you're talking about Dinah Shore,
get over it, Carolyn.
I'm not going to get over that. That was
thank God you came and saved the day.
I know, truly turned it around.
You really murdered. You're so fucking funny. I'm obsessed.
Yeah,
I'm so excited for us to get to know you today.
Likewise.
I was just listening to your podcast this morning on my mental health walk, Boys Club.
Yeah.
Could you tell our listeners about the concept of Boys Club?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So it's a podcast I started with my really good friend, Connor, who is a cis gay man. And it came out of our monthly show we do together at Club Coming in the East Village. And it's kind of just off the notion that like stand-up comedy is a boys club. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like traditionally that is anybody who's not like a cis white straight man. So we were like, oh, this would be a fun title to like kind of like reclaim that space and stand up as like, this is the boys club. And it's like queer heavy lineups, women, POC is like who we try to like put up for the most part. We had our first straight man on the podcast this week, 16 episodes deep, one of our good friends who we consider to be one of the good ones. But yeah, so on our podcast, Boys Club, we discuss boys clubs we've seen that week. And that's like anything from like dads on vacation to like, you know, people at SoulCycle or anywhere in between, just like silly things we see. And then we ask our guests to come on and tell us about some boys clubs they were a part of, were not a part of, and then that one that they would like to create in the world. And it's been super fun. It's like definitely been just like a passion project of ours, just to be like, oh, this will be a fun chance to like get to know our friends and talk with each other. But it's really like, it's become like one of the most fun things we do. So I've been excited about it.
Yeah.
I love the concept so much. I was listening to the Dylan Adler episode.
Oh, he's the best.
And I had stopped into a bodega to get a coffee. And I was like, oh my God, a boys club is happening right now in front of me. All these boys, all these men, cis men, obviously cutting me in line to like, because they were like more regular and had more of a rapport with the bodega guy.
Yeah.
And just like leaning over me and like putting their order in and like slapping money down yes. on the counter. And I was like, I will get in this boys club. I will just pick one of the bodegas. I need to just like focus on one of the bodegas in my neighborhood and be there every day and then start asserting myself.
That's a great one. That's a real life boys club. I've yes. been in that situation many times and I'm pretty short, so people will reach over me.
Being towered over.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was cool to be listening to you guys talk about yours while actively having it happen around me. I'm going to be thinking about it a lot.
Yeah. It's been fun because like we'll have friends text us in and be like, saw a boys club today. Like, and like this, my mom loves to tell me when she sees boys clubs in her world.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it's like fun that I feel like our listeners like to like engage in that way, which is cool.
Yes.
Man, I'm trying to think of some, but I think I like block them out for my own mental health.
Yeah.
Like,
fair enough. I'm
fair. Like, yeah.
I don't even see them anymore.
Well, this is kind of like a dyke club thing. Someone told us recently we should start asking our guests their big three, but then.
Oh, okay.
Do you know yours?
Actually, here's a boys club I'm not in, is that as I am a queer person who is so bad about knowing about astrology. Like I have friends who are like, my girlfriend like can read tarot and is like very into astrology, and like my best friend like is also very into astrology. So like when people tell either of them their chart, they like know what that means automatically. And I'm just sitting there like, awesome. And yeah. So I know my own, but I don't really know what it means all that much. So maybe it'll be of interest to you guys, but I'm a Libra sun. I'm a Scorpio rising and I'm a Pisces moon.
Wow. I feel like that makes sense for a performer comedian.
All I know is that Libra means I'm balanced and yes. Pisces means I'm emotional.
Yes.
Yeah.
Scorpio means you're intense.
Yeah. Which I don't know. I feel like, I don't know if I vibe with that as much because I feel like I'm, yeah. more, I don't know. Who's to say?
No, I mean, I used to be more like you, but then since really Melody coming into my life, I feel like just through like osmosis, I started like getting to know more about astrology, and then it coming up, I'm like, okay, so there are like some signs that I feel like I know a lot about, but also like since opening up my marriage, like anybody that I hook up with, like looking at them through the lens of astrology, and like also for my wife, she automatically all of a sudden like is all about signs and charts and everything, where she never mentioned it before, but now everything's like, well, yeah, they're being that way because they're a Pisces. Like
she's, you know,
like she's some expert.
100% more in these queer spaces, these parties.
Yeah, I gotta do the research. But there are some signs like Libra where I'm like, well, I haven't hooked up with Libra, so I have no idea what they're about.
Erica Rose is a Libra, Carolyn, if you want to base that off of anything.
That's a good reference point. Okay. All right.
Anyways, let's get to know Nico.
Yeah.
You're from Savannah, Georgia.
I am, yes.
I'm just like, wow, people are from there?
I know.
Like, I gotta know, what is that like? Like, I know people go there for SCAD. I know mm-hmm. people go there for, you know, your bachelor weekend, your bachelorette. how do you be from there? How you be from there?
So I was born in Syracuse, New York, and my family's all from upstate. And then when I was like 8 years old, my parents were like, it is too fucking cold up here. We need to move.
Yeah.
They both lived there for like 30 plus years at that point. So
Syracuse is the most depressed. I grew up in Buffalo for the most part, and it's like Buffalo, and then Rochester is like a more depressing version of Buffalo. And then Syracuse is like a greatly more depressing version of Rochester, but with like a great school.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So my mom's from Rochester and my dad's from a really small town called Herkimer, which is like near Albany. So they were like, we have to get out of here. And my dad got a job out in Savannah. So we moved down there. And so I moved there when I was 8. I remember being like, when they were like, we're moving to Georgia, I was like, where is that? Which like, I don't know what that says about the New York public school education that I like had 8 was like, I don't know that that's a state.
Prove it.
But I was like, oh, that's a state I've never thought about before. And then we moved down there. It's a funky place because it's got like this really old South history that's obviously like complicated and dark in most ways. And then, but it's also a beautiful city because it's got all this like old architecture and it's like.
And the trees.
Yeah, beautiful trees.
The moss,
it's basically like an island. It's gorgeous. Like the scenery is gorgeous. And then SCAD is there, the Savannah College of Art and Design, which has brought like a lot of really nice, like young energy to the city and more like artistic energy.
Queer energy. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of cool haircuts walking around there.
Definitely. Definitely. So that's been like a nice balance to the existing like kind of old school vibe that it has. So it's got this kind of weird like dynamic. And then also like so many tourists, lots of like bachelorette weekends.
Right.
It's a funky place. So like when I was growing up, I was definitely like not as exposed to some of like the SCAD stuff just because I was like more in like the suburb area and SCAD's all downtown. But I was back there for a lot of like the height of lockdown. I went home to Savannah and like was working remotely there. And I had like such a new appreciation for the city because I was like able to like see like some of the, I don't know, stuff I didn't see when I was a kid. So when I left, I was like, I'm never fucking coming back here. I hate this place. But when I went back, I was like, all right, there's actually some decent stuff about it.
Yeah, I book it for there. My parents had to leave the cold in Connecticut and retired down to like South Carolina. And I don't love it there, but I just took their car and drove into Savannah one day and became obsessed. Now, every time I'm there, I try to book some extra days so I can stay there. There's something very magical about it.
Yeah.
Like I love biking around there. Mm-hmm. Very bikeable city. And it does feel queer, but maybe that is from the SCAD kids.
Yeah, it definitely has some like queer energy. And I think it's like one of the, like, cause I actually started doing stand-up down in Savannah because I was like,
I gotta know about it.
It's a funny scene. It's like, it was a really cool place to start because it's like, you know, when you're in New York, obviously like you're exposed to every possible level of comedy in like a way that's like kind of crazy. And you're like, I can't believe I was on a show. You know, you guys had Alana Glazer on your most recent show or one before. And it's like, wow, somebody that famous is like just kind of around. You can see them at a show. That's so crazy. You think that they're like echelons away from you. But, you know, obviously in Savannah, the ceiling's just a little bit lower and you just like, you know, it's not as much of a pressure to like be good at anything, you know? So it was like a cool place to start. Because I felt like I could really like fail at a place where I was like not feeling like that was the end of the world at any point, you know? So it's a small scene and it's a lot of folks who are like emceeing and hosting and DJ stuff. And then they also like do stand up. So there's like 4 open mics a week, 1 show on the weekend, and like that's it. And there's probably like 15 to 20 people that do it.
Yeah. So curious. I'm always wondering if I should try to do a show.
Yeah.
And last time I looked up the open mics and I did bike to one and it didn't seem to be happening. So I didn't know where to look or.
Yeah. If you ever go back, I can absolutely like go up with the connects. You're going to hear some of the craziest, most upsetting things you've heard as is typical with open mics.
Even here.
Yeah, it was a funky place to start. And there was a couple SCAD kids. It wasn't as many SCAD kids as I would have thought, but actually one of my best friends now, Jesse Ballard, who's a comedian up here, she graduated from SCAD and we met doing comedy together in Savannah briefly, but like we're very like acquaintance level. And then I went back for my sister's graduation after I'd moved up here. And she was like, oh yeah, I'm graduating. I'm moving up to New York. And then we connected and we were like best buddies now. So like it worked out.
Nice.
But it's a silly place. It's like very friendly. It's very Savannah in that they're like so generous with like giving time. Like one of the first shows I ever did, they're like, do 15 minutes. And I was like, I have 5, but okay.
Yeah.
Oh, love that.
It's funny too, in like those smaller cities. Cause when I go back to Buffalo, I'm like, maybe I'll hit a mic while I'm here, but it's like literally the same like pack of people mm-hmm. doing the same mics every single week, and they all know each other. And then when you're like this new person signing up, they're just like, what?
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's so uncomfortable. I'm like, why am I nervous about this open mic in Buffalo? Like, what?
It's scary though, especially like you would get so used to being able to do like queer rooms and queer spaces, and like even just being in New York, like people are accustomed to seeing and hearing about queer people. But like when you go anywhere outside New York, it's different.
Even Buffalo.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like talking about something queer and like asexuals, and then like afterwards these people came up and they're like, oh, I had to Google what asexual meant, but once I did, man, that was funny. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Oops.
It's definitely like you gotta hold their hand a little bit more and explain a little bit more.
Right, yeah. Right.
So
for sure. Yeah, maybe it's good that you get 15 minutes then. Just
right, you know, yeah.
To break it down.
Add the educational part.
Yeah, 10 minutes for explaining. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, you recently got to perform in Los Angeles for Netflix Is a Joke.
Yes, I did.
I just watched that set. So good.
Thank you.
Yes.
How was that? I mean, obviously, you didn't have to break down any big concepts, or did you?
No, I mean, it would be hard because it was a 5-minute set. It was like, you know, showcase. So they had us do 5 for that. So not a lot of time to explain. But thankfully, you know, New York and LA, very similar. You can, you know, and a lot of that, you know, that kind of show, it's a lot of like industry people or other, you know, people that are related to it. So they know enough, hopefully, at that point to like understand. But it was a super cool experience. It kind of happened all really fast. I auditioned for it at the Stand Comedy Club in New York in March. And then like a week or two later, I heard that I got it. And then it was like, yep, you're going to go out there at the end of April for the showcase. And it was it just happened really fast. And it was my first time out in LA. So that was like a really exciting reason to go out for it. But the festival was very cool. It was massive. Like, I feel like every day we were there, they were like adding more shows and more venues and stuff, like, because it was their first time doing it. So it started out like a pretty reasonable sized festival. But by the end of it, there were like hundreds of shows and like hundreds of comedians in it. So it was a really expansive thing. And I'm sure they'll be fine tuning it and continuing to do it next year. But it was very cool. I got to meet some like pretty exciting people. I got to meet Beth Stelling and Jay Farrow and Leslie Jones because they were just like around. Very, very cool. I was pretty starstruck the whole time, but I was trying to keep my cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a whirlwind, that turnover time.
Did they, I mean, I assume they flew you out for that?
Yeah. Yeah, they did, which was cool.
So for a 5-minute set, you know, meanwhile, we're out here like scrapping for drink tickets and Netflix is like, yes, we'll fly everybody round trip to do a tight five.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing. The dream.
Yeah. They gave us 2 shows back to back, which was nice. Like there was a 7:30 and a 9. So like if you were too nervous for the first one, like, you know, you had a chance to do it again, which was really nice. Cause honestly, the first one, it was a pretty big venue that they set us up in, which was very cool. Definitely like the biggest, it was a theater. So the biggest room I've ever played. And the craziest thing, like we did a sound check before and I was like, all right, cool. I understand how loud this is. But for whatever reason, when you get out there and there's all those people, I was like, I don't know. I'm so loud right now. Like I was trying to like adjust myself. And so I feel like I wasn't really in it for the first one. So I was glad we had a second one. So all right, now I'm not having to, I know I'm going to be like blasting out of the back of the speakers here. So
yeah,
just like a different, you know, you're used to like shows with smaller speakers, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Wow. So fun. So in your act, you talk a little bit about your college days. Where'd you go to school?
I went to Wake Forest University, and people ask me all the time because the cadence of the joke that I tell, I say, I like found out I was a lesbian in a women's college soccer locker room. And my structure of that is like women's college soccer, like as one thing, not women's college soccer, but like people are always like, oh, which women's college did you go to? And I was like, oh, actually it is not. But like, I keep the cadence that way because people think it's funnier. So it works out. But I went to Wake Forest University and played soccer there. And it's funny. I didn't come out until my senior year. I didn't know. I'd actually been dating a boy on the men's soccer team for 2.5 years. So deeply closeted for most of college.
Wow. What was that like? Did you know when you were dating him, or what were the feelings going on, or what was your read on the situation? Were you like, oh, this is like as good as it gets?
So when I first got there as a freshman, there was a girl who was on the field hockey team who I was like absolutely infatuated with and like didn't really understand what that was or like that feeling. But I like, you know, now I know like what that was. And so we were, you know, best friends, but I was like completely infatuated with her. And then I started seeing my ex-boyfriend, but I was also like definitely in love with this other girl, but was like, oh, but I have a boyfriend, so it's all good.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like, I think people kind of like were like, there's something going on between the two of them, but nothing really was. And then we sort of had like a falling out because, you know, just she got a boyfriend and I was very jealous of that, but like also didn't understand how to process those emotions. So,
right. Classic.
Yeah. So then I like kind of just was like, oh, I guess I'll just date this guy and like not think about any of that. So that was kind of like how I was able to like convince myself to stay in that for so long. But then he graduated because he was a bit older than I was. And I was like, oh, he's not physically here anymore. And like in front of me, that maybe I can like think about other stuff. So that was like kind of what got me to finally come around to like dealing with some of that stuff. But it's funny because I remember thinking to myself that I was like, oh fuck, that's what that is. I'm gay. Like I was literally like when all the pieces came together for me, I was in the locker room of our team's locker room. And I was like, this is so classic that this is where I'm figuring this out.
Yeah.
And I remember I was like, okay, it was like a Monday. And I was like, all right, I'm going to see my friend on Friday who I know is like out as a bisexual woman. And I was like, all right, cool. I can tell her like, cause Wake is very like straight. And like, there just weren't a lot of options for that. And I mean, somewhat in the athletic department, but like not really. So I was like, all right, on Friday, I'll talk to my friend. And then Friday morning, we were in the locker room with my team and we were talking about just like how there's a lot of lesbians in women's soccer. I don't remember how the conversation came up, but somebody goes, yeah, that's so crazy that nobody on our team is gay. And I was like, oh my God.
It is crazy though, because you just assume, I mean, we assume because
at least the goalie, has to be gay.
The goalie has to be gay. And also your generation, I just, the way I look, I'm like, everybody's gay. No, right. I mean, you graduated, what did you say, like 2019?
Yeah, 2019.
I heard you and Lindsay talking about college soccer. Okay, yeah. Wild.
Yeah. And like, there was one girl who was a senior when I was a freshman, or maybe she was a fifth year senior. And like she was gay, but like it wasn't like super talked about. And then I came out, and then there's been a couple girls like after me who have come out, and you know, over time. But like it was kind of crazy because like I know on other teams there definitely were, but for whatever reason, like the people who found themselves at our school, and I don't know if it was like partly like the just the vibe of the school overall was incredibly straight, so it didn't like really encourage that, you know, self-discovery. But I just remember being like, oh, fuck, I literally was like planning to tell people today and like, this is the conversation we're
having. And that came up. Oh, man.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system. So wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Yeah, it's like it's so different and definitely depends on the college, because I had a straight friend who went to Dartmouth on a softball scholarship, and she was like, Carolyn, everybody on my team is a fucking lesbian, and it's starting to mess with my head because I'm like, wait, am I? But I'm not. And I'm like, no, yeah, you're not. Like, don't worry. It's not like contagious or anything. But she's like, but it's literally everybody but me. And I feel really left out. I was like, I know, but like, don't worry about it. But yeah, it's like such extremes.
Yeah. Honestly, like, obviously it would have been like nice to have some community on the team, but I know that like other teams had some like some drama because of it.
Drama. You know? That's the thing. Yeah. Yeah. I've heard those stories too.
Yeah. I have a bunch of friends who play in the NWSL who like play pro now, which is very cool. But they say that like the drama among like the players in the league is like kind of crazy because like getting traded to a different team, but it's like, oh no, but my ex plays on that team. Like I can't go there. And like that like plays into some of like the trade deals and stuff. So it's like, it's pretty dicey.
Wow. And maybe this is like a little bit aggro of me, but if I was like on a team, like playing soccer and my ex was on the other team, like if I had a chance to follow them, would I? Like, right? I feel like it's too tempting to just be like, this is the one time I can like body check them.
That's gotta happen.
Oh, for sure. It's gotta happen. Yeah. And yeah, it just seems like there's a lot of like behind the scenes, like romantic politics going on with that. Like most fans are like not privy to. So it's like, I always love to ask my friends that play in the league, like what's the gossip right now? What's going on?
Yeah. Lizzie Bowling, who did the show, you guys talked about soccer. She'll often like send me pictures and like give me the breakdown of who dated who, who's now dating whose ex. And like, yeah, I would have no idea watching these games, but she watches it as a soccer fan, but also as like this little like lesbian gossip who's just like needs to watch how everyone's interacting with each other on the field.
Yeah.
And yeah, I love having that intel watching games with her.
Yeah, it definitely adds to the game because yeah, there's a second level of drama on top of the inherent drama of sports.
Yeah, you're not going to get that with the NBA.
No.
I'm like, now I got to buy season passes. Okay, anyway. I want to watch that go down.
Yeah.
So you're in college, you came out as a lesbian, and then what was your journey like from there?
Yeah, I was out as a lesbian for probably like, I guess, 3 years or so, kind of towards the end of my junior year of college. And my friends and coaches and everybody were really awesome about it. My family's really great about it. Like I was very lucky to have like a very supportive, you know, my coach, we would have these like end of the year meetings to kind of be like, kind of like a, you know, how was your year? How was your season? Like pointers for next year kind of stuff. And, you know, a lot of these meetings can be very intense. Like people are very, it's high level soccer. People are intense about it. So a lot of people would like cry in these meetings or like get really emotional or whatever. And I was always like, you will not cry in these meetings. You will keep a straight face. Like, I don't want to like break down in front of him, whatever, you know, healthy relationship stuff. And yeah. My junior year, he was like, you've been off this year. Like, what's going on with you? And then I was like, ugh. Then I like came out to him and I was like, I've been dealing with this for the last couple months. Like, that's what's going on. And I started crying and I was like, get over yourself, dude. You are not the first person to come out as a lesbian to their soccer coach. Like, what do you think? You're
doing right? Def not.
I was like, you can't be the first person who's cried on this couch because you came out to him. I just.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I came out when I was a junior, and then like my senior year, I was out at school and it was like, you know, mostly fine. Like, you know, like I said, it was a pretty straight environment. So I was like, I definitely like got a level of visibility that was like a little bit probably more than I would have wanted at the time. I also like cut my hair short because it was long before then and I cut it short. And so like, obviously that adds to a level of queer visibility as well. So that was like probably more than I would have like asked for at the time, but it was, you know, I made it through. It was all right.
So since there weren't that many like queer people around and then you're out there looking cute with your short haircut and people know the deal, like, were you getting a lot of curious straight women, as is a theme of college mostly? Like, did you get a hoe phase? But
I definitely did. Like, happened at the very end of my junior year and like the summer, I was kind of still just like sorting things through and like coming to terms with everything. And then when the senior year started, I pretty shortly after that, I met this girl who I met through like a friend who ended up being my first girlfriend, who's great. And we had like a nice relationship and ended kind of abruptly. And because she has some like family stuff that just like, they're not super great about her queerness. So like kind of ended sort of abruptly because of some of that, which was a bummer and a tough way to end your first queer relationship. But on the plus side, on the other end of that, I got to go through a bit of a hoe phase in college, which was like, felt very college and very cool. But it was a lot of like sorority girls who were like, oh, you're different than all these frat boys that we usually talk to, but like kind of similar. Yeah. I don't know. So like, so I definitely had like my fair share of people who were like, I'm not gay, but like, I'm going to kiss you at this bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is like, you know, good and bad.
Fun.
So I got to do that for a bit, and then I graduated and was like not out of school for very long before COVID hit. And so then I went home, and then I was like in lockdown in my parents' home in Savannah, Georgia, doing nothing, seeing nobody for a while. And then it was kind of like during that time when I was like just doing nothing but like reflecting and sitting and journaling, like I'm sure most people were, mm-hmm. when I started coming to terms with some like gender stuff. And
yeah,
so I was home for a while, and then I moved back up here to New York in February 2021. So like kind of right before vaccines and getting back into life a little bit more.
Yeah.
So I moved back up here, met a couple trans dudes, and I was like, oh, okay, you can do this. That's great. All right, cool. I can do that then. And then I kind of came out and started that process, and have been out almost a year as I've been like really publicly, openly out as trans and like changed my name publicly and stuff like that. So it's been good. It's been like a good year, and for the most part.
Wow. Love that. What a year.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't realize it had been like a year.
Yeah.
Like to have your career kind of taking off, getting like just attention visibly as a trans man, but just like fully like industry attention too, like so much visibility. Definitely. That's wild.
Yeah. It's something I definitely have had to like, you know, think about a lot and like balance, because, you know, on the one hand, it's like, you know, trans people in comedy, it's like such a buzzword thing right now, especially with like a lot of the transphobia we see from like older comics. And
right,
to some degree, I feel like to counter that industry is like, oh, but like we can find these like funny trans people to be like, we can balance it out, you know, and that's, you know, going to take advantage of that for as long as that is the case. But it certainly is something where I'm like, oh, I'm still like constantly kind of working through these feelings. And it is my way of dealing with things, is to write jokes about it. And it often is like right. a great way for me to like go through these emotions and think about these things. And I do like to talk about it on stage. It's a balance, because sometimes I'm like, oh, that was like really vulnerable, and people feel like they can ask me about that, even though it's like, oh, I wrote this joke so that you could hear these exact sentences about this and not every other feeling around it, you know? So
Right.
I'm sure you guys have experienced that too. Like, I think most queer performers do.
For sure.
But it certainly has like opened me to people being like cool with like asking kind of invasive questions, because I talk about it a lot. And it's like, oh, that's not, you don't get to know the backstory or the context or anything. You get to hear the 10 minutes I wrote for you to hear.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is how I process my trauma. And it, like, there's periods at the end of these sentences exactly. on stage.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure. It does seem like a lot of people over lockdown had a lot of kind of like reckonings with their gender yeah. and transitioning. And I just feel like it must have been because we were all like at home, not being seen by anyone. So we weren't mm-hmm. like performing in society and just got to be like who we want. But I kind of had like almost the opposite experience, in that like I couldn't get my hair dyed. So I was like letting it grow out, but then got it kind of like cut short to cut the pink out. And then I let my armpit hair grow, and I stopped wearing makeup. And then I like looked in the mirror. I was like, nah, this isn't me. And like, as soon as the pandemic was over, I'm just like, razor, like, get it out, get back to
yeah.
but yeah, I see. But like, we were all kind of like feeling like, let's try this look out. And for me, it did not work, but
yeah.
But I'm happy for everybody who learned. I mean, I learned something about myself too, like,
yeah,
you know, yeah,
yeah.
Confirmed femme.
I think that like so many people, yeah, like you said, like didn't have to perform anything for anybody, you know, they're just like at home, and hopefully many people were in places they felt like relatively safe to like really be that. And that definitely for me right. part of it. I was like, you know, I'm only here. Nobody's seeing me other than my family, who's like, you know, doesn't give a shit. So it was like definitely a point. I like remember I was like, I like ordered some boxers on Amazon. Oops. And
canceled.
I know, right? And like wearing them, and I was like, oh, this feels really good. And I feel like that was like step one into being like, oh, I really like this. And then I don't know, and yeah. then like thinking about, I don't know, just yeah, really starting to unpack that. I read a book. I don't remember if I did this joke when I think I did. I usually do it when I'm in front of queer audiences, but this is a true story, that like when I came out as queer in college, I came out as a lesbian, I was like, it was literally like a week or two after I read the book Love, Simon.
Yes.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And which is like so embarrassing. And I remember then I don't know, at some point during the lockdown, I read this book called Amateur, which is about, it's by a trans writer named Thomas McBee. And it's about his like experience just about being a trans man, but also he was a boxer, like an amateur boxer, and the first trans guy to box in MSG for this like charity event. But I remember reading it and being like, damn, I hope this doesn't do to me what Love, Simon did. And it absolutely did.
No!
I feel feel like we're going to get a lot of people flocking to this book, I think, after listening to this episode.
Yeah.
Well, I do think it's funny because, like, there are all these, like, Christian groups that, you know, there's, like, gay content on TV and they're like, boycott it. Like, we don't want our kids to turn gay. And it's like, it's not how it works, dummies, but also it is. We just don't want you to know that. Like, it's like we're born gay, but, like, something has to activate it. And, like, you know, for me, it was Michelle Pfeiffer. For you, it was a book. Like,
No, totally. It's like, yeah, they're incorrect that it should be police, but they are not wrong that that is how it happens.
Yeah.
I love that it was literature. Usually it's like when people talk about it, at least like on this podcast, it's usually something very visual, like TV film sort of medium. But that's dope.
Black latex. Michelle Pfeiffer. That's
yeah. I feel like definitely for like my queer awakening, I know I did cite two books here, but it was like, you know, I've always been like a big Emma Watson fan, you know, and like big crush on her. And then I'm sure a lot of trans people feel like there's just so little representation of like trans people on TV and stuff. You know, like we're finally getting Elliot Page is getting a lot of like limelight and stuff, but like there just aren't a lot. So like I definitely identified with like versions of masculinity, but I didn't really understand what that mean. Like I feel like as a kid I loved there's like pictures of like teenage Simba and I was like, whatever that is.
Oh my god, yes.
I was like, I identify with that.
As a bisexual, I was also looking at teenage Simba, but in a different way. Wow. Just unlocked something.
So you can definitely like trace it back, but I feel like in terms of like actual like, hey, you can have this experience, there's not a lot of like options for that. So like, I hope that there continues to be more. It's funny, my family has been very good about me being out and, you know, pronouns and names and all that good stuff. And my grandma actually is like really, really good about it. She's, you know, 75 and I've never really had any issues with her. And like part of the reason I think is because she's a huge fan of The Voice. And there was like this trans dude who was a contestant on The Voice this year. So I think she was like, oh, okay, that's Nico. Great. Got it.
Yes.
My mom watches The Voice and talked to me about transness because of watching The Voice. Like it's, I love it. Yeah. Not just like cast and written roles. Reality TV actually probably like packs a bigger punch these days because it is actual people. We get their video package about, you know, their actual life story before we get to see them perform. We learn all that about them. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shout out to The Voice.
Yeah.
It does seem like Melody brought up how much younger you are than us. And like, we just like grew up at different times. And sometimes you could just feel like it must be so easy now, but it's probably not that much more. Like, even though that stuff is still out there, there's still, I feel like, this cognitive dissonance from like whatever you're experiencing and dealing with like the normal human emotions of growing up and like these like big like truths about yourself that you can't like wrap your head around. I don't know, because now we're like, you should just see a TikTok and be like, yeah, I'm gay. It's like, how could people not know their sexuality or what their gender is at this point? People are laying it out and have, you know, fun background music to it.
Yeah, it's funny, like, I think just by, like, a year or two, because when I came out in 2018, it was a little bit pre-TikTok, so, like, I remember I had, like, one queer friend at Wake, and I was, like, talking to her a lot, and she was like, yeah, you should, like, go on Tumblr, watch The L Word, and, like...
Starter pack,
Oh, yeah.
That, and that was kind of the still, and, like, that was the vibe. Still, that was, like, kind of the resources that were available.
Yeah.
And it's funny, just even, like, a year or two later, like, we're kind of, like, TikTok kind of got big after... I think really during COVID is when it really took off, but like it was certainly after I was out of college. So like my girlfriend came out more recently, like kind of sorted it out during the pandemic, and she was somebody who like kind of was more exposed to like TikTok stuff. So I was like, I feel old even a little bit in that I'm like, oh, I was pre, like I didn't have like TikTok options, but like then for like gender stuff, it definitely like for that awakening was like a little bit more present. I was like, oh, I can like watch any like trans dude creator who's on here, and there's, you know, 50 of them, and I can like go through and like see all their stuff, and like that's really cool because it's, especially when you don't get to like meet or see people all the time, like it's so nice that they're like, you can just like look up like trans man on TikTok and there will be, you know, a bunch of guys talking about their lives and their stories and their medical processes. And it's just like, I'm so grateful that that's a resource that people have now, because it makes it, I think, a lot easier to like understand that it's not just you who has these feelings, and like there are people who have done it and lived to tell the tale, and like it's coming straight from them. It's not like a cis writer writing about their experience. Like, they're telling you what their thoughts are on it. And there's, you know,
yeah,
you can scroll for days on it. So it's really pretty cool.
And they're showing you, like, they're literally taking their testosterone and documenting their voice. And it's just, so raw. Yeah. Wow. TikTok.
Yeah. But I was definitely like, when I first came out as like queer, I was like watching the L Word and the old school way of coming to terms with everything.
That's good to know. I was when does that stop? It definitely is slowed down. Obviously, like, it's dated. It's so problematic. We don't need it anymore. But
yes, but as like a point of conversation, like, it's less about like, this is going to teach you about the queer community, and more about like, this is in the zeitgeist, and you just kind of have to, when people are like, oh, you're a Jenny, like, you must know what that means.
Right. Yeah. It definitely made me be like, oh, I have to move to a big city and then just have like all gay friends, which I ended up doing, which is amazing. So I'm lucky that that's like the life I get to live in.
That's what I did because of the L Word.
Like, I know a lot of people who legit said they moved to LA because of the L Word, and they're like, yeah, I guess this is where the lesbians are. And then they went out there and they're like, oh wait, they're all mean out here. Let me move back.
Yeah. I feel like LA gives like gay, and New York is more queer.
Yes.
Yes.
That's the kind of vibe I got.
Yeah. Nico, is there anything else you want our listeners to know?
Definitely. Like, if you've liked me on this, please check out my podcast, Boys Club. It's on Apple Music and Spotify. It's a lot of fun. And then I have a monthly show at Club Coming. If you're in New York, definitely come out. We were talking about Lex earlier. I have tried to post on Lex to promote it so many times. And every, like, a lot of shows, I'm like, is anybody here from Lex? And it's crickets. So I've been trying to get more, like, you know, of a queer audience.
Interesting.
Yeah. Club Coming's like a very, you know, it's a queer space. It's a gay space, but it's certainly like cis gay men heavy, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I've been trying to like expand our audience to be a little bit more queer and a little bit more diverse in that. So if you're listening and you've liked me, please come see Boys Club, our monthly show at Club Coming. Our next one is, it's always the end of the month. So last Friday of the month.
Is Alan ever there?
I've never seen him. I think maybe he pops in sometimes, but he's really good about, like, he'll promo the shows on his Instagram. I think the booker and him have a good relationship about being like, hey, like, we need to sell tickets for this. We put it on your Instagram. So he's good about doing that, but I've never met him.
I've heard amazing things about him, that he's like one of the nicest people and very, very generous and like supportive. Yeah. So
I've heard the same.
Yeah.
That's what's going on with me. So check it out.
Cool. I'm going to do that tonight. I'm like afraid to ask though, because then they'll be like, well, there's one bomb. Anyone here from Lex? Crickets. Okay. great start. We'll see. All right. Yeah, we do have one more question for you, Nico.
Do you have any gossip for us?
Any gossip?
What about any controversies that are like going on right now that you're like, ugh, this is ridiculous? Like the Fletcher Becky controversy. I don't know if you're up on that.
I'm not up on that.
We haven't talked about it on the main.
Yeah. Do you scroll TikTok? Do you see like TikTok drama?
Yeah. So I like, also similar to the astrology stuff, I'm so bad about keeping up with stuff like that. But my girlfriend and my friend Jesse are very good about like being on the pulse of that stuff and keeping me updated. So I understand that she like name dropped an ex in her song and people are upset about that.
Her exes. And I didn't even realize she named the song Becky Is So Hot. And Becky is the current partner of her exes. So she doesn't even name the ex. It's the new girl.
I get the urge to create and write about heartbreak and strong feelings, but I feel like if you want to be like, I'm above this and I'm over it, like, don't name a song. Like, that's a song that's out there forever, and now everybody will know that you, like, you were not over it.
Yeah.
Not a good way to like win the breakup, I feel.
There's a lot of names that rhyme with Becky.
Yeah.
You can go.
Or like any other name, really.
Yeah. Most names.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think the name rhymes with anything in the song. She just really wanted to use the name.
Actually, yeah, you don't need to rhyme. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Fletcher definitely wanted everyone to know that she is not okay with it. I think that was like the point of the song. I think if her ex wasn't also like an influencer who's in the public space, who I think is also very much benefiting from this and also benefiting from being like, how dare she bring my new girlfriend into it? I don't know.
She's definitely making a lot of money off of her reaction videos to this song.
I'm still team Fletcher.
Yeah. The ex is an influencer too.
Yeah.
Man.
That's drama.
Less drama.
The thought of like that kind of like being so public makes me so nervous. Like, I just would not be good about that.
Yeah.
So your girlfriend is a comedian.
She is. Yeah.
Do y'all talk about each other in your sets?
A little bit. I have a joke about having a girlfriend that I do like interchangeably. And then she has a joke about me that is also very funny about, like, basically the punchline being like, trans men are still men, just like me being an idiot. So yeah, we talked about each other. It's really nice to, like, we met doing comedy and like hit it off like instantly and had like a very instant connection, and we're like best buddies. So it's really fun to get to like watch her successes, and, you know, we understand each other's worlds really nicely, and we have all the same friends and stuff. So it's very nice. I feel very lucky. She's the best.
Do you have ground rules? I'm just asking. My girlfriend's stand up too.
Oh, great.
And we met doing stand up in Chicago in the scene there. And we didn't establish any rules before we went long distance, and she moved here and I was still in Chicago for a while. So then she came back to Chicago and was up at the Laugh Factory, and I went to her show and I was like, wow, that's intimate. So we had to like have a conversation, like what flies, what doesn't, or at least if there's a new one, do we run it by each other?
Yeah.
So I'm always curious about comedian couples and how they navigate that.
Yeah, I definitely, anytime I'm going to say anything about her or write about her, I'll definitely be like, hey, like, this is the joke. Is that cool with you? Or like, I'm going to talk about this. Is that okay? Like, even today at the beginning of the podcast, when I was talking about like the Kyoto story, I was like, I just want to make, like, I'm just want, this is how I'm going to word it. Is it cool if I like mention you and stuff? So just so
not
everyone feel like
healthy
in any way disrespected, or that like I would be bringing something up that she doesn't want to hear about. So
yeah.
And she's also very good about asking me about like doing jokes and stuff before she runs them. So we have a pretty good like dynamic in that way.
Love it.
It's funny. I talk about my wife a lot, and she's not a comedian, but she's just like such a big part of my life that it works its way into my material. And somebody the other day was like, oh, I was at that show you did at Union Hall, and I kept thinking, I hope her wife isn't here. I'm like, oh, my wife's like second row recording and like laughing louder than anybody. And they're like, ugh. What a relief. I'm like, yeah, you think I'm just like around like making these jokes about my wife without her knowing about it and her not being okay with it? Like, come on.
I should say Allie was riffing at the Laugh Factory show. She was riffing, and I was like, well, we got to talk about if that's going to be a permanent thing.
Yeah. I feel like they extend the same like assumptions that like when like, you know, straight guys are like, my wife sucks. And it's like,
yeah, true.
Yeah, we're not doing the same. Yeah, that's not the same thing.
We are not the same.
Right. I know. I'm like, what am I, a cis man? Like,
right.
Come on.
Yeah.
Goes for this podcast too. People will reach out and be like, you need to be nicer about Allie on the podcast. I'm like, I run everything by Allie. She loves it. She like if I talk about her, and she has a podcast too, we'll have each other listen to an edit if we think it's something that they should like be discerned about. I don't know.
Yeah. People's parasocial relationship to you, it's crazy.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Don't we know it?
Well, that's another episode.
Yeah.
Nico, where can people follow you on social media?
On all platforms, I'm just at Nico Carney.
Right.
Yeah. Instagram, Twitter. I technically have a TikTok, but I've never posted anything on it. So no need to follow me there. But
you're in good company. You're in good company.
Same.
Amazing. Give him a follow. And you can follow us at Dyking Out everywhere. And you can follow me at TGI Carolyn.
You can follow me at Melody Kamali. I'll post my new Grover shirt when it arrives.
Yes. And thank you so much for listening.
We'll see you next Tuesday.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.